We, of course, are in the sounding of the trumpets. How many trumpets are there? Seven, okay. And the nature of trumpets...
These are erasable or not. It says they're washable.
That means that they're wipeable. Hopefully they are. Trumpets, of course, are to warn or to signal or to communicate. And what we have here in this chart is a summary and comparison of the seven trumpets. Well, six actually. The seventh one involves in the outpouring of the bowls of wrath. And two applications or two interpretations of the trumpets. And I'm going to ask you in a few minutes which two interpretations they represent, or that information represents. And we'll talk about the methods of interpretation again. I want to do something that I know you're tired of hearing, but I'm going to keep doing it until you know it. If your memory fails, you still know it.
Huh?
Factors. Factors in understanding the book of Revelation are four or five in number. Let's see if we can identify them. Give me one. Okay. Must, soon, come to pass. And that occurs three times in the book of Revelation. Twice in chapter 1 and once in the closing chapter. Must soon come to pass. Number two might be what, Charlie?
Written to the seven churches.
Written to the seven churches. That's two. To the seven churches of Asia. Okay. Does that mean it doesn't have application to us? No. But primary application to them. Secondary application to us. All right, number three. All right, symbolic language. Or, more specifically, apocalyptic. Apocalyptic language, which means... What? What kind of language is that? That's an example of it.
Symbolic, yeah.
That scribbling up there.
Very
vivid. Okay. Vivid, exaggerated, mysterious. Frightening. We're going to probably read some about the locust tonight. There's been no man who has seen a locust that looks like the one John describes in the book of Revelation. Is there another one? Those are the three main ones. There might be some other considerations, but those are the three main ones. Now, what you read... You're right.
People look at one little phrase
Right.
And they build a whole scheme of interpretation.
Right. Now, here's what's going to happen. If this is true and it is, if this is true and it is, and if this is true and it is, those three items all depend upon the historical significance of that day. In other words, the answer to the question, what was going on in the world in the first century, in the 90s, in the 80s and the 90s, and then on into the second century? Because what was happening there would affect the interpretation of these three together. And we'll see that tonight in the information that I gave you about the methods of interpretation. But you see, people for the most part aren't interested in that. What they're interested in is Abaddon, 1,000-year reign, mark of the beast, who is Gog and Magog. And on you go, you see. And those are not involving the overall picture of Revelation. They're involving details, symbolic details too. But that's a lot of fun. That's a lot of excitement, you see. But that'll get you nowhere. That might buy you a cup of coffee, but that's it. Yeah. Have we got something to wipe with, guys? Well, it'll wipe, Jerry. Well, I don't know. Okay, I'll tell you what let's do. Let's look at the methods of interpretation. Let's review those. Everybody got a copy of those? Now, what you got here, really four basic interpretations and a fifth one, which we have listed here as select wisely approach. I use the word a more sophisticated legal professional word like selective, or another term, and I'll think of it in just a minute. Eclectic. I think Jerry it'll come. But I'm not asking you to memorize this stuff, but to just have a general idea that there's more than one approach or interpretation of the book of Revelation. And they're not all sensible. Notice I said they're not all sensible. I didn't say they were not all correct. Because I don't know that there is an absolute correct interpretation usable on the book of Revelation. But anyhow, here are the first four listed are the basic ones, and then your last one is a special one. We'll talk about it when we get down to it. But you have the futurist approach. And you can remember that by just simply thinking of the word future. Future. The futurist looks at the book of Revelation and he says, it is prophesying and predicting of things to come way out yonder. Way out yonder. And most of those way out yonder haven't come to pass yet. And they're still in the hopper, so to speak. They're still being cultivated and mixed and so forth.
Those people generally
change their interpretation.
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. Like in the late 30s, everything in Revelation had to do with it.
Oh, absolutely. And communism.
China.
Yeah.
Or the Middle East, or Iran,
yeah.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
It keeps changing.
Hal Lindsey, had that philosophy, that interpretation. That's how he sold his books.
What's amazing is whenever something alarming happens in the world, they'll get on television and they'll say, here it is, predicted, right here in Revelation. But they never tell you that until after it's happened.
They seize the opportunity. We'll say that. And then you have what is called the continuous historical approach. Now that one has to do with church events and church activities, focusing and pinpointing Roman Catholicism. Now, a lot of our brethren back in the 30s and 40s got themselves involved in that kind of stuff. In fact, when I was coming up as a youngster in high school and college back 50, 60 years ago, that's what I was taught, that Catholicism is the culprit. I mean, they're the ones that God is projecting his wrath at, because they're the ones that messed up the church. They're the ones that carried the church off into idolatry and all of the other good and nasty stuff. But the continuous historical approach is that these events follow chronologically an order of sequence, an order of history, or an order of happenings. Continuous historical approach. The third one here is the preterist. The preterist approach. And this approach tells us that the book is describing things that have already happened. They've already been in the past. Just think of the preterist as the past people, the people who are thinking about the past, things that have already happened. Some of them maintain that some of John's visionary descriptions here had already passed there in the first century. And they insist on that. I guess it's an overemphasis of what we had up here on the board a while ago. Things were soon to come to pass. And then you have the symbolic approach. Now, it concentrates on timeless principles that transcend all centuries, almost to the point of ignoring the main principles that are spiritual and political and relate to the times and the histories of nations. The symbolic approach. What I'm sharing with you, my viewpoint, my concept is sort of an eclectic. Let me put that word up here. I think I can spell it. Eclectic. Eclectic means that you take in the best, in this case, in the best of the interpretations, and combine them into one that makes sense. And that's why down here at the bottom we have the select wisely approach takes the position of the preterist and the symbolic views and sort of combines them, taking the good points from each one. So, if you'll pick up your trumpets chart, okay? Now, you want to work down the columns and move to your right, but down the columns. The first six trumpets, the first through the fourth, deals with calamities on land, the sea, the water, and the universe, like moon, star, and sun. The fifth has to do with the locusts. We want to talk about them tonight. And the sixth has to do with the army of angels. Now, the interpretation of those trumpets is described in the columns that follow. And you'll notice, of course, it deals with two basic interpretations. It deals with Rome, the history of Rome. In other words, what we're saying here, John is describing a situation regarding the Roman Empire, and the likes of Diocletian, Nero, and some of these other idiotic emperors, and dealing with the principles of truth and error, or if you want to put it, principles of righteousness and sin. Now, which columns go where? Well, a warning to Rome, natural disasters, internal decadence. What do we mean by decadence? Corruption, okay. Corruption would be a good synonym. External invasion, they were invaded from the north. In fact, that's probably what did the Roman government in for good, was the invasion from the barbarians in the north. And then, of course, the last column over here, it would be your application to the church and to the world in general, to a world of sinners. And it's going to be a hard way. It's going to be a way in which only the people who have the mark of God's approval will be spared these disastrous trumpet calls, and particularly the outpouring of the wrath of the bowls, which we'll see towards the end of the book. I thought that information would be good, and you would appreciate having it, putting it, and just slip it. I didn't make any holes for that, so you may want to do it like I'm doing. Just slip it in a pocket. I think all of you have pockets in your folders. Just stick it in your pocket there. I realize when I breathe hard, it sounds like I'm a lion up here roaring, but it's not that bad. Any questions so far? Okay, we'll take our Bibles out and let's take a look at some things in here. When we're talking about these trumpets, you know, as a warning mechanism, and that's certainly a part of their task, is to warn. Does God choose that method sometimes to warn His people, to inform His people, to let them know what's about to happen and what's going on and what they can expect? Natural calamity. For example, the severe hurricanes that we've had lately that have blasted themselves upon us from the Gulf of Mexico, particularly from the Gulf of Mexico, by the way. They may have started in the Atlantic, but when they got over here, they found their way into the Gulf and then up through the Mid-South. Is it possible that God is saying something to us through those storms? You're shaking your head.
We found out we weren't all powerful and all wise and know how to build good as we should. And there were lots of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, it knocked us down.
Because you'll notice here in the trumpets, particularly the fifth one, or rather the fourth one, you have the calamities of earth, land and sea, and the heavens. Also, what about disastrous events such as the tower explosions? By the way, that subject is coming up again here in this political arena. And people are remembering that there were certain preachers who said the next day after the towers were bombed, so to speak, by people. Anyway, these so-called ministers were saying, hey, this is God's announcement or pronouncement that y'all haven't been living right. And there was a great cry of complexity and negativism and criticism. And one of the main spokespersons for the... At first, anyway, he changed his tune later on, was Jerry Falwell. I don't remember now whether Billy Graham said anything or not. He was pretty quiet. But yes, I think we all agree to some extent that God warns mankind through natural calamity. Yeah.
No, but the hurricane, the fire,
through this kind of event. Yeah.
Well, somebody who has their Bible open, turn to the 8th chapter and read 7 through 12.
McCord's New Testament. After the second angel sounded, something like an enormous flaming mountain was thrown into the sea, and a third of the sea became blood, and a third of the creatures in the sea died, and a third of the ship was destroyed. After the third angel sounded, a great star burning like a torch fell out of heaven, and it fell on a third of the rivers and on the fountains of water. The star's name is Wormwood.
Okay, Charlie, as you read that passage, what are some things that come to you immediately as to what you might see here as a interpretation, as a description of what John is trying to teach?
Woo! I mean, it's kind of... I haven't seen a flaming mountain.
Of course you haven't, because it's symbolic. Because it's apocalyptic.
I haven't seen a third of the ocean become blood.
Absolutely not. And you won't. Ever, literally.
I hope not. My goodness. I've seen a red tide, but that's just around.
Yeah.
That's in Fort Myers.
In terms of interpretation, you see two things here. Readily. There may be some others you see, but two things readily. You see a description of the problems facing the Roman Empire. And if you would read, or if you have opportunity to read, certain historical essays about Rome at this time, like Gibbon's Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, some good piece of history about what's happening in Rome, you would see immediately some direct connection between what you are reading and what's here in the 8th chapter of the book of Revelation. Secondly, what you want to see down here at the eclectic means of interpretation, you would see John describing the condition of the world in general. Now, you know, it's like the plagues in Egypt. The first few plagues in Egypt fell on the Egyptians and the Israelites. But the last plague And I believe there were two or three of the last plagues, other than the death of the firstborn, fell only upon the non-believers, the Egyptians. And God provided a way of escape for the Israelites. So you see here the natural calamities relating to the earth, the sea, the land, the waters, the atmosphere. And you know, we're talking about such disasters as fires. We've had them. Tornadoes, we've had them. Floods, we're having one now along the Missouri River. Droughts, ice storms, hurricanes, earthquakes, erupting volcanoes. Those are all examples of calamities. You just think for a moment. If birds were always singing and balmy breezes were always blowing and the temperatures were like they were today always, nobody would want to go to heaven. We'd prefer staying here. But you see, daylight darkens into madness when a storm hits and violent winds blow and we have other thoughts then about staying here on this old earth. Now the next paragraph is the fifth trumpet, and that's verses 9:1-12. Who has that? Would like to read it?